On behalf of the Northeast family, we welcome you this morning to our service here at our facility, as well as those who have joined us online. We have been talking this week, about something that is very important, and that is remodeling. And there's the before picture, and there is the after picture. And I know what some of you are thinking. We're talking about remodeling. I thought we got something completely different last week. But really, there is an angle on looking at work and vocation in a different way that does tie in to what you see up here. Have you ever visited somebody in their home? And you've been there before, you've seen what it looks like, and maybe you go visit again maybe a month or two or sometime later, and they've redone their kitchen or a room in their house, redone their living room, and you look at it and you say, whoa, you know, that's amazing what you've done with that. What you can do with just, if you're able to, knocking out a wall and just doing some changes that bring about a different look that gives you a perspective on the same space and gives you an angle or a viewpoint on that same space that you've never even thought about before. And so you see that, and you see that in that space there were possibilities that you could not imagine before. A lot of the shows that you find on HGTV are all about that. It's reimagining how this space can be used, how it can be more attractive, how it can be more functional, how it can work better. And so you may go home and then say, you know, maybe we need to do something as well. Maybe I could make a few changes in the kitchen or do this in this spot if we can afford to do it. It's almost like sometimes you don't notice things until you've had an experience that makes you take a look at something differently. For example, you buy a new car. You've never had that car before. But now you bought it, now you have it. What happens when you're driving down the road now that you have this new car? What do you notice? You notice all the other people that are driving that car. You never noticed it before. But your viewpoint has changed because of what you are now experiencing. And so that's what we're talking about when we talk about this idea of redeeming work and why it is so important for us, as we began the discussion last week, into this week, into next week, that we take a fresh look, that we take a revamp angle on what we're doing at work, how we spend our days working. And that's not just on the job at the office. There are all different kinds of ways we can work. I noted last week that people can choose to stay home and work at home and be with the kids. That's every bit as much vocation as anything else. I mentioned last week that work is good. Work is good. Work is good because we've been created to work. From the very beginning, God implanted within us in word and within our very souls and being this drive to work, because that's who God is. That's what God does. God is a worker. And so in being and living in His image, we reflect that in our own lives. But we also know that work has been cursed. Not just the ground, but the whole context of the workplace, the work that we do, is filled with frustration and difficulty and challenges that weren't necessarily in the design that God had for work from the beginning. But here's the good news. We're created to work, and while there are flaws and difficulties with work because work has been cursed and we are products of the fall, and we're broken, work has been redeemed. If we are in Christ, if we belong to Christ, if we have the viewpoint of Christ, if we see our lives and we see this world through the eyes of Christ, then the struggles and difficulties and challenges associated with work can be looked at in a different way, because we've been redeemed in him. And so when Paul could speak to those even who were slaves back in this day in the Roman Empire, he could say to them, when you do your work, you're not doing it primarily for your master. The work that you do, when you do it right, with integrity, you're working for the Lord. And that elevated what they did in terms of how they lived as an example for their masters. And masters were told, treat those who are under you, treat them with care and treat them with fairness. I already noted, and this is just a side note, I mean, it was the influence of Christianity that led, as time went on in the Roman Empire, for slavery to be pretty much abandoned by Christian people as time went on because of these very teachings. And yet, in that context, in that work context, there was a value in the work that could be done, knowing that ultimately, the work that we do, whether we're talking about our jobs, whether we're talking about what we're doing at home, we know and we believe that whatever we do in word or deed, Colossians 3:17, whatever we do in word or deed, we do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. And as I mentioned last week, we need to resist this temptation to divide our lives from the secular and the spiritual. And so the thinking that what we're doing right now in this assembly, or if you're online viewing this live at home, somehow that this is more spiritual or more religious than what you might do during the week in a given context related to other people. And so we should never look at our vocation, whatever that vocation is, as just a job. It's so much more. We are disciples of Jesus 24/7. And I am encouraging you, I am challenging you and myself, whatever your vocational status is right now. If you're on top of the world and you have what you feel like is a dream job and that it's going very, very well, you love your job, then I'm going to share some more things that will help you make things even better. And if you're in a situation right now where you are miserable in your work, you like a different job, you dread going to work, that you too can rediscover a passion that is so important because we spend so much time at the workplace. I mentioned last week, maybe 750,000 hours in our lives. That's why work is so important. And so here's the big idea. The big idea is this. The big idea is that your work has worth. And you can bring your work to a higher level, much like these girls in our neighborhood that were trying to do this. A couple of months ago, Jeannie and I got these flyers at our door. I don't know if we got a knock. Did we get a knock, or were they just sitting on the porch? Did they actually hand them to you? But here they are. We got one. The one on the left you can see here, Ellie's Cleaning Business. I'm 8 years old. I'm responsible. I'm trying to make some extra money. I'll do any of the below. Clean your whole house, clean your bathrooms, get your mail, feed and care for your pets, weed your flower beds, rake your leaves, do your taxes. No, it doesn't say that. But so if you want a clean house, call Ellie Willis, and then they give the number there. And then here's this other one. You can't see it as well, but I love this one. For a small price, you can get full relaxation. Dog walking, prices vary depending on how long the walk is. Dog sitting, $2 an hour. Cat sitting, $1 an hour. Excuse me. Now you see the different value and worth of dogs and cats there. I'm not going to make any more comments on that. $2 for a dog, $1 for a cat. I know there's some out there who are thinking it might be 25 cents for a cat. But anyway, all right, I'm sorry if you're a cat lover. Anyway, if you're interested, call or text this number to have relaxation for as long as your heart desires. Pets can be a handful sometimes, and that's where Whiskers and Tails pet sitting comes in. Whiskers and Tails can pet sit your dogs and cats, and we can walk any and all dogs. Prices will vary depending on how long the walk is. Tips are welcome. So use Whiskers and Tails for all of your tail wagging, whisker tickling friends. Whiskers and Tails crew. And I will tell you this, I wanted so bad to find a job for these girls. Now, I don't know what would have happened if we had called one of these girls up and said, we want you to clean the entire house, clean all the bathrooms, all the, you know, I don't know if they necessarily thought through all of these things. It might have ended up being one of those things that maybe mom came to help them do what they were doing. But here's the idea. I love the enthusiasm. I love the passion. I love the idealism. And so there are many who maybe have lost that passion and that purpose in that vocation, that job. But the big idea says, whatever you do, your work has a lot of worth and you can bring it to a higher level. And one of the reasons for that, I just touched on this last week, is that in our work, ultimately, we are in the people business. We're not just making widgets. We're not just producing some product. Ultimately, every one of us, whatever we're doing, we are affecting other people. We're in the people business. And so what I want to do, I want to look at three ways that we can bring our work to a higher level. And the first one simply deals with our attitude about what we're doing. And the first one is this. I want you to remember that in the work that you do, the work you do is an extension of God's grace and His goodness in this world. The work that you do, unless it is inherently sinful, is for the common good. And that common good, many times, touches people right where they are. And I want to look at a verse that kind of testifies to that point. In Matthew chapter 5, when Jesus is talking about a higher standard of living, and He's encouraging those who are His followers not to hate others who hate you, and not just love those who love you. He says, I want you to love your enemies. And then He says in verse 45, so that you may be sons of your Father in heaven, for He causes the sun to rise on the evil and the good, and He sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. That's God's goodness. That is God's grace, and the term theologically that is used is the term common grace. And it's different. Common grace is different from grace, you know, salvation from sin. You know, that is something that we accept through Jesus Christ, and we put our faith in God, and we commit our lives to Him. We're baptized in His name. We become His children. We're saved by His grace. And obviously that grace is, when it comes to eternity, the most important grace there is. But common grace is not a small thing. Because the goodness and the gifts, the generosity of God to all that is seen in this world is an extension of who He is. And He has called us to partner with Him in doing that for others. So I want you to think about the job that you're doing, and I want you to think about how it relates to doing good for others and how it helps others. And I want you to try to resist this idea that, you know, I'm doing it, I'm getting paid, therefore I really can't I really can't make any claim that I'm just working a job and I'm getting paid. But let me ask you, a lot of it depends on your attitude. Just because you're paid for it doesn't mean that you aren't partnering with God in blessing the world and blessing others. Understand the point that I'm making. It's knowing that as a human being, in life, in community, in this world, God is calling us to live the kind of lives and do the kind of work that makes the world a better place, blesses the world, blesses our community, and even in sometimes hard, difficult circumstances. Think about what the prophet, or God through the prophet, was saying to the people who had gone off into Babylonian captivity. From our reading this morning, he says, I want you to settle down. I want you to work. I want you to prosper. I want you to get married. I want you to have children. I want you to contribute to the well-being of this place. I want you to pray for this community. And they're off in captivity. And yet, God says to them, you can make a difference in this place. And what is good for this community, it's also good for you. So when you go to Kroger or Meijer or Walmart or wherever it is you buy your groceries, and you see all that abundance of food, you thank God for that food, don't you? Ultimately, it's God who provides that, right? God made the plants grow. But he also created the people who were involved in the process of getting that food to the store that you take home and that you eat that is a blessing to you. And it's taking part in that, joining God by our vocations in that work, that trucker that hauls the food, the people that work in the store, the farmer that grows the food. When we say we are thankful to God, and we are, we still understand that there are a whole lot of people that God uses to bless us and we others. I challenge you to do this. I challenge you to think about what you do. And if you're one of those people that says, I have a job or I do something that doesn't help or bless other people in any way, I want you to come up to me and I want you to tell me what that job is. I don't think anybody's going to be able to come up to me, tell me what you do, and say it doesn't help or bless somebody in some way. I said, unless it's inherently sinful. So if you're a drug dealer, Don't mention that one to me, okay? So you understand what I'm saying. And I know it's a subtle point. It's a subtle point. But it's profound that in our job, in our works, we get to do people, since we're in the people business, things that ultimately bless people. All right, the second thing I challenge you to think about and to do, and that is to consider your workplace God's space. Consider your workplace, wherever that is, home, on the job, consider that God's space. When you go back to Genesis chapter 2 and verse 15, and it says, God told those whom he created to work and care for the ground, the land. That word in Hebrew is a word that carries with it not just the idea of doing work. Avada is a word that could be translated work. It could be translated service. It could be translated worship. It is a word that was used to describe what the priests and the Levites did in the temple worship. So it's not just this idea of plain old work that is separated from this idea of devotion and service to God, much like what you read in the book of Romans when Paul says, offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God, which is your spiritual act of worship. That's a good translation. So Paul is reminding us, reminded them, that your devotion, your worship, is not just something that you do. Obviously, it's done differently when we gather in the assembly, but your worship and devotion is shown by you sacrificing your life wherever you are, including your job, daily, to make a difference. And so, when you enter the workplace as a Christian, God's already there. But He's entering that workplace through you in a special way. Because we are the temple, the dwelling place of the Holy Spirit who lives within us, and we are not our own. So I want you to think of things in that way when you enter that workspace. It's God's place. It's God's place. So when Paul encouraged the Thessalonians to work and to be examples in work to others, notice what he says in the fourth chapter. He says, make it your ambition. Reboot right now. Make it your ambition to lead a quiet life, to mind your own business, and to work with your own hands just as we told you, so that your daily life may win the respect of outsiders, so that you will not be dependent upon anyone. Paul is reminding them, and he is reminding us, that Christianity, in terms of its influence in the world at Thessalonica, it wasn't just about everybody quitting their jobs and going out and doing church work. Their church work was wrapped up in their work. And he says, by the way you do your work, you have an influence upon others. And so that leads me to this last point. And that's this. Because that is true, because in general we are involved in God's goodness in this world, and because we are, wherever we are working in God's space, in God's way, in God's place, then He calls us to a standard of excellence that will have a more powerful influence upon those with whom we have contact. I cannot think of a more powerful example from the Old Testament, anyway, about the power of work and the difference that work makes, blended with this whole idea of generosity and goodness. In the story of Ruth, you know that she went with her mother-in-law, lived in Moab, married sons. Naomi had several sons, had her own husband. These Moabite women married these Jewish men, and eventually they all died. And so Naomi's going home, and Ruth wants to go with her, and she says, no, you stay here. And Ruth says, no, I'm going. I'm going to go where you go. Your God's going to be my God. And she goes, and just to summarize the story for those of you, check it out this week. Read the book of Ruth. But it's in her work and the way she works, in the context of work and kindness and generosity, that God brings about an event that eventually had a bearing on the Messiah coming into the world. Boaz notices her in the field, the gleaning in the fields. He sees how she works. He asks questions about her. Long story short, they get together. They're married. She gives birth to a man who is eventually in the line who gives birth to King David, eventually to the Messiah. And so in this chance meeting, in the context of work and vocation, and in the context of kindness and generosity, This woman is in the line for the birth of the Messiah and one of the few women in the genealogy of Jesus. So I ask you this question. Where has God placed you? Where has God placed you? You may be retired. You may be at home with the children. You may be in an office with coworkers. You may have employees you call on in your business. Whatever that context may be, there are people all around you. Whether for a period of time it's those children at home or whether it's that person in customer service, we're surrounded. Where has God placed you? And I know what some of you may be thinking. I'll tell you right now where God's placed me. He's placed me with a lot of hard, difficult people. And some of you, in replying to that survey, you mentioned the fact that, you know, that was one of the hardest things about work, dealing with difficult people, petty, gossip, laziness, people who cut corners. But still, for right now, God has placed you there. Question number two that follows up from that is this question. Do you view the people that you encounter at work, in work, as being entrusted to you by God? If you look at it that way, as Andy pointed out in the introduction this morning, every day is a day for mission work. Every day is a day for church work to glorify God. And I appreciate what Andy did in that intro. I did not ask him to do that. But I think about just how many people that we come in contact with, sometimes on a chance level, and sometimes people by design at work, and you will be amazed at how your attitude about them and what you do for them and how you serve them will be altered by praying for them by name. And as I was preparing this series, one of the people that I talked to said, it's amazing if there's somebody that I'm having a hard time with at work, and I make it a point every day to pray for that person. It is amazing how that alters not only my attitude about them, but how it changes what I do to them and how I treat them. That's trying to see people through the eyes of Jesus. And then the third question, as we come near to a close, what will you bring this week? I asked the same question last week, and I purposely am asking that again this week. What will you bring this week to your workspace? Home, on the job, an awareness of God, bringing thoughts of who He is and praying to Him and meditating to Him during the day. But not just that, maybe God is calling you to raise your level of excellence in your behavior, in your work. And maybe you've been letting things slide and other people are noticing. That bears a reflection on your example where you're working. Maybe you manage people. Maybe you're a boss. And you're giving directions all week to all kinds of people. Maybe God is calling you that maybe your employees need to see more of a care and concern and a genuine care about your employees and not just the bottom line. Not just making the sale. It involves a complete paradigm shift in how we view that 8 hours of work, or however many hours of work that is. Work is good and important because work, ultimately, whatever we do, we're in the people business. Amen? In the people business. And so, with the eyes of Jesus, we've been called to see past the messes and ask Jesus to help us see the masterpieces. Next week, I'll be talking about how that applies to, you know, where we are vocationally, finding our vocational groove. What about being retired? What about starting out? And we're going to look at some of those things next week. But I want to close with this thought. Why is your work worth so much? Because you're involved in God's work in showing grace to others and providing what they need. You're called to make your workplace God's space. And you're called to excellence in everything that you do because you're in the people business. I think about Jesus being a carpenter. And while the most important thing that Jesus came to do ultimately was to die on a cross to serve us that way. But that doesn't negate the time he spent as a carpenter. And how I'm sure he didn't look at his time as a carpenter as wasted time. In fact, when he began his ministry, people in the community criticized him. Hey, this is the carpenter. I have no doubt that when Jesus built a table or a chair or a farm implement, whatever it may have been, I'm sure he did that with all the rigor and conscientiousness that he did everything else. He was the master builder in everything. Think about it. The hands that fashioned this world came to this world to spend time in a carpenter shop. And that was not wasted time. So we want you to know and remind you that Jesus is the master builder. He is the master rebuilder. He can do the rehab on your life that you didn't think possible. And he can give you a before and after picture on that in terms of everything, including your work. So we'll wrap this up next week. I look forward to being with you and want to remind you, if you have any needs, want to contact us about what it means to follow Jesus, have interest in baptism, whatever that might be, please be sure to let us know. Thank you for joining us online as well. We're going to take the Lord's Supper after we sing this song. Thank you.